Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. This is We Talk Productions presenting Black Urban America. All you folks that listen by laptops, and if you want to call in, you have a comment or a question, the call-in number is 516-531-9540 and press 1. That's 516-531-9540. The lineup, as usual, on Tuesdays, we have Black Urban America. I'm your host. My name is Kenny Jones. On Wednesday, we have The Cutting Edge with Michonne Williams. On Thursday, we have Ports of Harlem Magazine by Wayne A. Young. And finishing up the week, on Saturdays, we have Provocative Thoughts by Carlton Steed. All programs begin at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Now, questions. How are Black folks doing since the struggles of the 60s? Are there improvements in the Black communities of today? How about the relationship among Black men? Tonight, join us for Baltimore. We have political activists and running for legislature. We have Sister Makaya X. Muhammad. Mika. That's Mika or Makaya?
Mecca.
Mecca. Oh, like it Mecca. Okay. Sister Mecca X. Muhammad. Welcome to Black Urban America, Sister Muhammad.
Thank you.
I hear that you have something you would like to read to start off the show. Would you like to do that?
Regarding the Willie Lynch letter?
Yes.
It's a pretty long letter, so it probably is going to take as long as the show. I just wanted to touch on a couple of points about the Willie Lynch letter in our discussion.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, first, about the Willie Lynch letter, the main thing with the topic being, why are our brothers killing each other? There are a few reasons, but let's take it back to the Willie Lynch letter, take it back to the mindset. See, we, those that know about the Willie Lynch letter, it was designed as a way to keep Afro-Americans or people of color or descendants of slaves down for the next 300 plus years. And unfortunately, here in 2021, we still, a lot of us or a lot of our males and some females still have that mindset. For instance, there's a problem with division within our community. The Willie Lynch letter basically explains how you divide and conquer in order to keep our people from being united and building that foundation. So, for example, Mr. Willie Lynch talks about that the methods that he has chosen will work for the next 300 years. The first one will be age. You pit the elders against the older people. So, unfortunately, nowadays...
No, Mr. Lynch was right in that.
Exactly.
Mr. Lynch's strategies were right.
You're correct, and it's very true. And, for example, for the age, the first step was an age. Unfortunately, nowadays, a lot of our youth don't respect their elders. So you have the older young man versus the older young man. So once again, there's division because the elders are the ones that teach the young ones they are the next generation. So they teach them their experiences. Now, if you don't respect them and you're not willing to listen to them, how you know which way to go? The second one is pitting the skin color or the shade of skin color against one another. So you have light skin and dark skin, and we all know that and growing up, you've had issues or people have fought amongst themselves because look at the light-skinned brother, he think he better than the darker-skinned brother. And you're still brothers either way, no matter what your shade color is, from albino to blue-black, you're still brothers, so you shouldn't want to fight against each other because you're different shades. Then another topic it touches on is about the female and how if you break the female and she has a male son, then basically what happens is you putting it nicely, you can weaken the male because the woman can teach the man but so much, but it's nothing like a male teaching another man how to be a man. And now if you remove the man out of the house, then unfortunately the man being the head of the household, and it's nothing sexist in it, but that's how God ordained things, if according to one's faith, then it breaks down the family unit. So
you know what, Sister Muhammad? In 1968, there were only 20% of black households led by the female that was the breadwinner. To today, there's 72% of black households where the female is the breadwinner. So, yeah. So where the black family and the black household has been weakened in the last 50 years.
Exactly. Not to mention, you know, the welfare system as being a part of that situation, because you tell the woman that she doesn't need the man. And again, it's about not being about anything sexist, but, you know, there's a family unit. If there's a mother and a father in the household, and statistically, you know, I'm not trying to be funny about the situation, and I'm not knocking the sisters that are single mothers, not at all, because I love my sisters. But at the same time, the child has a better foundation when there is a family unit. And what the welfare system did was remove the father out of the household by telling the woman that she doesn't need the man in the household, one, or two, that he can't be in the household in order to get any benefits from us in order for her to help maintain her family.
At 40%, 40% of black families are dependent on government aid. Yes, go ahead.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, and to receive some of these benefits, you know, they try to come between the mother and the father for example, child support. And you know, when you bring up that child support, boom, that starts the division. Well, it used to be the man couldn't be in the home. Well, now the man could be in the home, but sometimes that man could be somewhere else. In other words, it might be another individual that may not be a positive father figure.
This is very, very true.
I'm sorry, go ahead. I was just agreeing with that point. You know, if you want to discuss that more in detail, go right ahead.
Well, let's take Baltimore or the state of Maryland, for example. If a woman is on getting welfare or any kind of government assistance, but it's called TCA in Maryland, or TANF. So long story short, basically what happens is that even if she puts the man on her case, they eventually will cut or remove her assistance in order for because she puts the man on her case, or if he's living in the house, which again still creates a problem because the economy is not in the best that it due to COVID and due to inflation, and the economy has had its ups and downs. So if you remove both incomes from the family, and I understand it's still government assistance, I understand it's taxpayer money, how do you expect the family to be able to maintain? Which leads to sometimes the brother going out to do what he has to do to survive to be able to take care of his family, leading to one of the problems that we have in our community with our brothers killing each other and committing genocide.
Mm-hmm.
So it's set up by, unfortunately, design. And a lot of people may agree with me. A lot of people may not agree with me. But if you actually take the time to read the Willie Lynch letter, you will see how all this has continued and it continue up until today and will continue if we as a people don't try to do something about it and reverse it.
Okay. Now, one of the issues you want to talk about was the have blacks improve since the struggles of the 60s, the late 60s, soon. Now, just one point I want to ask you. You know, in the late 60s, there were race riots, assassinations. And back then, you know, Dr. King said there were two Americas, which I agree, the black America, white America. Do you think there are two societies today, a black society and a white society?
I think that there are multiple societies, according to your race and culture.
Mm-hmm. Explain. Well,
and I say that because, you know, you have, depends on one race and culture. It is, you go according to however, that's how your society will go, your rituals, and their way of life that you have been doing for generations to for generations.
Mm-hmm. So you don't think there's a difference between black America and white America?
I do.
Okay.
I honestly do. But, and the, unfortunately, the problem is some some people, they tend not to understand the differences in society. They think that because you can help, you agree with the points of the struggle, that, you know, that it is different. It's no difference, and you're amongst the try to help or be amongst the people, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's go back to the household. Let's go back to the household. Early, I said that in 1968, only 20% of the black household was led by the woman being the breadwinner, compared to today, 72%. Why do you think, how did that happen historically? You think as generations, as the years go, you know, we get better. How did we go backwards? What was the root of how we went backwards for 20%, which is not a high number, to 72%, which is a very, very extreme number? That means three quarters of black folks come from households where, even, I don't care if it's middle class, low income, upper income, 72% of the black household are led by where the women are breadwinners, compared to 20% since the struggles of the 60s. How did our family get so depleted in that area?
Well, there's integration, one. There is the feminist movement, two. There is the welfare system, three. There's the 1994 crime bill, four. Those are how, and from a historical perspective, those are the reasons that how our population has gone backwards. Now, let's talk about integration. And now, don't get me wrong. You know, a lot of people figured that segregation was the best back in the 1960s. And some people will still talk about how we have to have our own separate whatever we may need. And that's understandable. But when we were segregated, unfortunately, and even though it's, you talk, segregation is a negative thing, then we were more self-reliant and self-dependent. And so the, so with us not being segregated and being working within our own communities, the family, the black family, was stronger when there was segregation, unfortunately and fortunately. As far as the feminist movement, women were quote-unquote liberated, so they were no longer felt to be the second class or number two or have to be subordinate or submission. They were told that they didn't have to be like this towards their husbands or their boyfriends or whatever the case may be, the man in their lives.
But originally the feminist movement was white women wanting
yes.
to be equal with their mates and the salaries or what have you. But,
right.
but when the black women joined the feminist movement, one thing that separated the white women with the black women always worked. That's number one.
Of course.
Number two, when it's all over at the end of the day, the white women went back home to their husband. And the black woman took on, to me, the black woman took on a different type of thinking, saying like, well, I don't need you now. You know,
right.
I'm independent. I could do
right.
I could do for myself and everything, which
right.
was supported by different American institutions.
Exactly. Exactly.
I'm sorry, go ahead. I just want to make that little note. Go ahead, Sister Miami.
But exactly to what your point was and my original point, you know, it's for women in self-liberation that I don't need a man complex. And it's not saying that you're thirsty, as the young people say nowadays, but it's the mere fact that it's better for you because, you know, God created man and woman. He put them together as a pair for a family in unity and harmony to build that foundation for the next generation. So when you have that mindset, again, going back to the mindset, that you don't need a man, what do you expect to happen? How do you expect, you shouldn't expect that foundation or the family unit to increase rather than decline. Now, we've already touched on the welfare system, again, regarding taking the man out of the household. And the last but not least, the situation with the 1994 crime bill. And a lot of people get so mad at me when I say this.
Which Biden spearheaded.
Exactly.
It was on C-SPAN. C-SPAN had just started, okay? It was a spinoff from CNN, and he got up there, and I'm going to quote Biden, that I do not care what type of condition you come from, you are still a predator. And he used that word, predator.
Exactly.
That's who's running the country today. That's who black folks broke their necks for to put into office.
Exactly. Exactly. And this is why I said a lot of people don't agree with me, because they ask me, well, you don't want to vote for Joe Biden. You know, he's a Democrat and, you know, he's good and he's, you know, look at Donald Trump, his actions, he racist, he's this, that, and other. But then I sit there and I had to enlighten them and I had to tell them, you know, Joe Biden pushed this behind and Hillary Clinton saying that black men were male predators as well as Joe Biden. And your former president, Clinton, signed off on it.
Hillary Clinton's hero is the one that started Planned Parenthood, and there are more Planned Parenthoods in black communities than any other communities.
Right. Hillary Clinton's hero is Margaret Sanger. Margaret Sanger.
Yeah.
The woman that created Planned Parenthood, because she felt that African Americans, descendants of slave Afro-Americans, were having too many children. So a way to deal with population
control
is create the abortion system or, and I quote, birth control. But back to the crime bill, you know, this took a lot of fathers out of the homes and gave them 25 plus to life on a 3-strike rule for small quantities of whatever they may have had on them, or if they violated and they were put on the ball and chain for parole and probation. So if they broke that law, then 9 times out of 10, they were going to jail for a very, very long time. So, again, once you remove the father from the home, how do you expect the family unit to maintain and the black family to to rise in the manner that we were during the during Black Wall Street, or during the Renaissance, or during the 1960s, prior to all these things happening.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned integration. Now, it is said that integration did build a middle class, the black middle class I'm talking about. Everything I said is pertaining to the black community. So if I just don't mention the word black or African American, whatever, I'm talking about our community, because that's what shows, my shows are all about, is the black community. There's more graduates from college and everything. We can live in any community. So with all that integration going on, do you think we still held back?
Yes, to a certain degree. And why, I say that because...
So what did integration prove then? Now, you brought up integration. So why did folks, and they still, now they don't call it integration no more, they call it multicultural. I don't use multicultural. I use what I'm concerned about, black folks, or the more modern term, African Americans. We're still the same. So why are we breaking our necks today, begging to be integrated, if we're still being held back? Why we don't look at other strategies? Now, you're a political activist, and you're about to run for legislature and what have you. Like, is politics, is participating in politics and being integrated in all with other cultures, is it really working for us?
Well, yes. Then
all right, go ahead. How is it working for us?
Participating in politics is worth it for us because lack of knowledge, what is the scripture? Our people perish for lack of knowledge. And if, unfortunately, you have a lot of our people that don't know, and what I mean that they don't know is they will protest about a problem that we have an issue with, and we have every right to. We exercise our First Amendment right to freedom of assembly. But you should not, protesting does nothing if you don't take the time, or put it this way. You can protest all you want to, but that's after the fact. Taking the time to actually know what politics is about, how politics are, how things are run, like for instance, another example would be, take the time to read your local bills. Take the time to that your mayor and your city council or your aldermen are passing. Go to your city council meetings, your county council meetings. Say, take the time to listen into your legislative meetings. Pay attention to the congressional hearings that are going on, so that way you know what bills are being passed and how it affects your community. And in order for you to, you can be knowledgeable of it, but in order for you to really sometimes really enforce the change or enact the change that's needed, you have to get in the middle middle of the nitty-gritty, as an elder used to tell me, in order to be able to educate your people and all people and be able to help them from a political or policy perspective.
Check this out, Sister Bahamut. Hold that thought for a second. I got the last question I have about the political process, all right, is the part B. Okay, now, since the late 60s, we had a lot of black mayors. Since the late 60s, we have black senators. Since the late 60s, we have been a part of the political process. Since the late 60s, we had a biracial president. Since the late 60s, we in the political process, we have been involved and what have you. But we still have a poor educational system, poor health care. I'm talking concerning the black community. We still got a high dropout rate. The criminal justice system lock up more brothers than any other criminal justice system in the world. So all
yes,
this all this participation, all these black mayors, we had a couple of black governors, we had a biracial president, and we got these black senators and black congressmen, and there's no improvement in our communities. So why should we continue to participate in the political process if we're not seeing any benefits from it?
Well, one, you shouldn't vote for them just because they're black. I'm being real. Let's really be honest. Mm-hmm. Our community voted for Barack Obama just because he was black. Now, don't get me wrong. It was correct. That was, you know, I understand the
he campaigned black, but he governed white.
Yeah, exactly.
He campaigned black. He governed white.
Exactly. So you don't just vote for a person just because of their skin color. You have to pay attention to what their policies are. Do they really have the best interests of the community at heart? And if the answer is no, because any politician can come to you with a sugar-coated mouth, as one African man told me when we were talking politics. But if their actions that really show if they really care about the community, and as in the paraphrase in Malcolm X, you know, you said once our people wise up to what the quote-unquote white man was doing back then, and then they'll send someone in the black person into the community to let them know that everything is okay. And unfortunately, as much as our people complain about what the white man is doing, you have your own folks that are sitting in these offices that do the exact same thing to you that you say that the white man is doing to you. So this is part of the reason why our community...
And they do it worse.
Exactly, because you are part of the community. So you know what it is to struggle if you've been down and pulled yourself up out the mud. And you forget where you come from, and then the money and the power, they get the Pharaoh complex from the Bible and the Quran and the Torah. And it does something to them. It changes them, and they no longer care about what's best for the people or what's in the best interest of the people.
I have two questions before we get into the violence. I have two more questions. Okay. No, really, three. Okay. The first one is, are we better off today than ever before, or do you think we're still in slavery, in another type of slavery?
We're still in another type of slavery.
It's the 60s. You know, okay. Well, what's that other type of slavery?
And Kanye West said racism is still alive, but they just still concealing it. And that is a very true statement. Now, it's no longer the Jim Crow or the segregation, but it's social economic situation. And I say that because, okay, you were not allowed to read to write when during slavery. That was a big no-no. You could get killed. You could be whipped for it. And you could be sold off. Now, look at our educational system, as you mentioned earlier, a few minutes earlier. Now, our children, we have poor educational systems. So how do you expect our children to excel if they're not taught properly what they need to learn and the knowledge to give to them to be able to teach the next generation and to do
guess
better
what,
for
Sister
themselves?
Muhammad. Yes, but guess what, Sister Muhammad? In a lot of black predominant communities, our educational systems are run by black chancellors, black
mm-hmm.
principals, and black
mm-hmm.
teachers. Explain that.
The overseer.
How can you come from a neighborhood, go off to a university, get this sheepskin, come back, run this institution, or teach your people what have you, and they dumber than ever before. And the dropout rate is higher. the kids ain't reading or learn. The kids aren't learning how to read or write or what have you. They don't know how to complete sentences. They don't even want to. They're not even encouraged or motivated to learn. And this school is run by a black principal. I think that's worse than a drug dealer.
Yeah, this is very true, because we're having the same problem here in Baltimore. Right now,
it's all over. It is any, if you go to any predominantly black community in the United States of America, if you look at it, it's run by a black person and the children are not striving. And this is what I read one time. This is what I read doing some research a couple of months ago. I never thought about this. And it goes back to The Miseducation of the Negro by Carter G. Woodson. Black folks, black teachers, black principal represent white supremacy. We don't even know.
I apologize, brother, but can you repeat that? You broke up a little bit.
The black school system, the school system in these neighborhoods, in these communities that are run by black principals and colleges, they are representing white supremacy, and they only... You heard me?
Yes.
Think about that. Do you think educators are representing white supremacy in our school system?
If you are referring to white supremacy such as the CRT, then yes, because these educators go to school and they are taught a certain type of way to teach their curriculum. So then you pass this on to the children to teach them the same curriculum. And if you can catch the children at an early enough age, then it's about how you teach them how to think. Or, in other words, say you have a robot, and you train it or design it to do a certain kind of thing, then what do you expect to happen? And they are, as a result of the way that they're taught, they're teaching this to our students. So I wouldn't say white supremacy. I would say just a way to dumb down our children so they won't be successful, so they won't be able to think for themselves, so that they will be able to be controlled more easily.
Do you think our schools are a gateway to the prison economy? Huh?
Yes and no. I say yes because for without lack of education.
No, I thought that was breaking up again, and that's why I said hello. Oh, you're thinking about the question I asked. I'm sorry, Sophia.
Yes.
Go ahead.
I say yes and no. I say yes because without a good education, unfortunately, then you go into survival mode and you do whatever you have to take care of you and your family. So sometimes it comes at doing illegal things. So with that being said, after you commit doing illegal things and commit crimes, then it causes you to end up in jail, on probation, parole, or in prison. I say no, because you also have your own mindset. You know right from wrong. Even you have the basics of what the teacher is teaching you. Even if they're teaching you some nonsense, you have your own mind. And you,
really know right from wrong? We just talked about the household.
And that's what I was getting ready to say.
We just talked about the household. Do they really know? First of all, do they know who they are? That's not
the point. I was getting ready.
Number two, these households today, now you talk about the 60s and today, these households today ain't nothing like the ones in the late 60s.
Exactly. Exactly, because it used to take a village to raise a child. And that village
and
is all gone.
What happened to the
unfortunately.
Village? What happened to the village? Well, the village
exactly.
is gone. They
right.
asked. And now it's just a cool, you know what? This is what I got to get about us. And I'm sorry to get off the get off the topic a little bit. This is about us. We say these sayings. Like, for example, what's the good saying that everybody say? Black power family or good morning, peace and black power, you know. What is peace and black power? What is peace? When everybody killing each other with gun violence. Black power? What type of black power? What type of economic black? What type of economic black power are you exercising? I know what I'm exercising. The only time I spend my dollar with another culture is going to the grocery store. Everything else I spend my dollar with is a black individual, man or woman. Okay? What type of black power are you exercising? Do you even know what that statement means? In other words, it takes a village to raise a child. Okay, what type of village? What type of village we living in now? Where every woman shaking their behinds?
Exactly.
Where every dude wearing their pants down to their knees? And
right, and
this?
Not knowing what the history behind that is.
It's a booty call for booty banners in prison.
Exactly.
As a matter of fact, it's slavery. The slave master warned you to wear your pants down below your behind so you have sex with you.
Yep.
A lot of these slave masters were homosexuals. So
right.
Don't let me get into that part of the conversation. But we say all these things to show people, oh, I'm woke. Oh, I'm down or whatever. It's not what come out your mouth. Well, yes, will come out your mouth, but it's your actions behind the words.
Exactly. And, you know, you talk, like you said, with you hear a lot of our people talk about black power and talking about, you know, how they woke, but yet you're willing to kill your brother. You're willing to be Cain and Abel, have a situation of Cain and Abel. Or you hate on your brother as they did, the Joseph brothers did from the Bible, the Quran, and the Torah. So, number one, you got to be peaceful. You got to unite. You got to cease fire because that's still your brother. Regardless of what the situation is, that's still your brother. And ceasefire, and what I mean by ceasefire is ceasefire like Fred Hampton did with the Rainbow Coalition, because you all have a commonality. All the organizations were formed because there was an issue and there was a commonality from the Black Panther Party to the other organizations that I don't like to use another word for, all the way down to the Black Rainbow Coalition and to the OOAU and the Nation of Islam. All these organizations, the NAACP, were started as a way to protect their communities. But when you are out here killing each other, you can't sit there and say black power. You have to go back to having a set of rules if you're going to unite. You have to abide by a code or a way of life if you're going to unite and not look at your brother like, oh, he's doing better than me, so I'm going to hate on him and I'm going to be a crab in a crab basket. You can't talk about black power and then in the same breath or in the same action, turn around, kill your brother, and shoot him 15 times in the back, or just walk up to him and walk up to a party and shoot in a crowd of people because you're trying to get to one person. You can't do that.
No, you can't. And that's how come we have 93% of black men that are victims are killed by other black men. 93% of black victims are killed by other black folks and everything. Why aren't we addressing that? Or is that a crisis? Is there a crisis, really, that black men are killing each other? And if we think there's a crisis, why is there a crisis?
there is a crisis because how are you going to continue the next generation without the man? You know, it takes a woman and a man to procreate.
I shouldn't have said that. Excuse me. I'm on a public forum. And other people going to listen to this show and download this show and listen to some of the things I'm saying and everything. I didn't mean to say my wife. I meant to say getting involved with other men from cultures. That's more politically correct, right?
Yes, but you still have the First Amendment of freedom of speech, so it is what it is. It ain't no cancel culture over here.
Sister Muhammad, you got some jokes with you, huh, Sister Muhammad? You got some little jokes with you, huh? If you're not on your game, boy, it'll fly right over your head. But I know what you're talking about.
But yes, like I said, there is a crisis because you can't continue the next generation without the male. And if you're killing each other, if you're in jail, locked up, and again, you do what you do behind closed doors, whatever is your cup of tea is your cup of tea. But if you are floating the other way at the same time, and this may piss people off, but truth be told, then what do you expect? How do you expect our next generations, where are our next generations are going to come from, period?
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And speaking of next generations, you know, do we have something? I'm an elder, right? Well, I consider myself an elder statesman. You know, do you think that we got something to look forward to with the generation of the millenniums? Do you think we're okay? You know, this group, boy. They really going to do it, man. I can't wait. Do you think we've got something to look forward to?
Yes. We can keep hope alive.
Messy Jesse. Go ahead. Keep hope alive, huh? Let's hold that point. Why we got to have hope? Why we just can't have action? Are we that so far down that we got to have hope? We got to have hope in this march. We got to have hope with this protest. We got to have hope with this candidate. We got to have hope with this schools. We got to have hope instead of having confidence in ourselves to do.
We can do both.
For ourselves. Gotta have hope when you got your hand behind your back and you can't do for self. And you need something to be dependent on to help you get over the hump.
Well, first of all, faith without actions is...
Mr. Muhammad, it's all right to disagree with me. I'm a big boy.
Faith without actions is dead, first of all. So before you do anything, you have to have faith in the fact that what you're trying to do. Then the second thing that you do is then you act. And the third thing, as far as having hope, is to we got to actually get back to talking to our children. You know, I have four daughters, and I have conversations with them all the time about this.
Oh. So, I know your hair is white.
Not quite yet.
I guess no reason. Daughters, oh boy. Do you just sleep at night? I'm just joking.
But I sit down and I talk to them because one thing that I used to do was always, and I do to even to this day, is I'm always around the elders because I want to know what they know. what advice and guidance can you give me so I can spread that to the next generation? And that's
Let me stop you there. I did the same thing when I was a youngin'. And the advice that I got from the elders did not turn out good. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. You know, sometimes the advice from the elders could be outdated. Sometimes the advice from the elders could put you down the wrong path. For example, with me, in my generation, go out there, get an education, get a job. Go out there, get an education, and get a job. If a young kid come to me, I said, man, don't work for that white man. You get an education, get a skill, and become an entrepreneur or become a business owner and work for yourself. Or you could work for somebody for 5 to 10 years and then start venturing out on your own. But in the end, you want to work for yourself and start networking with other other black business owners and entrepreneurs.
This is true.
The advice that I got from my elders was wrong. I'm at the point that I'm about to retire in 3 months. I sat back for, I went down the wrong road. But I've been working for the white man for 40 years. And it wasn't a clean experience. If I tell any young kid come to me, I say, yeah, go get the education, get a skill, and start your own business, work for yourself, and network with other black business owners and entrepreneurs. And you know what? I got to make deal 2 times that I tried to start my own thing or what have you, but it I still had to have contracts with them or what have you. It just didn't go anywhere. And I put like 7 years into another, I put 5 years into it, you know, just didn't pan out. But I want to say this, I did, but if I was starting just a little bit younger, and by the time that I did start it, it would probably have been violent and what have you. And I think we had to get these young folks, get them away from the Western thinking of going get a job and everything versus of doing for yourself.
Right.
Working for yourself or creating our own jobs. There was this radio talk show host. I think he's still alive. His name is Bob Law. And his show used to come on in New York at 11 o'clock at night. And he was a big economy guy. Matter of fact, I went to a couple of his workshops. And this used to be his example all the time. First generation, go to school, get that degree, got to walk the pavement and ask somebody for a job. His son rose up, get that degree, he got to walk the pavement and ask somebody for a job. His son grow up, get that degree, he got to walk the pavement to get another job, ask somebody for a job. Putting their time and energy in raising somebody else, at least one of them generation, should say, hey, why should I want, let me take the skills that I have learned and try to do this for myself. So when I have a son, I have something to pass down to them. And then that son can either continue the business or start to sell it and start another business with the skills that he has. And other cultures do that, like the Asians and the Jews.
Well, on your first point, you know, the elders can only teach you what they know. So that, you know, I have conversations with my dad all the time. And, you know, he only taught me what he knew from based off of his experience. And then he was taught from my grandfather. My grandfather taught him what he knew and so forth and so forth. So they can only teach you what they know. Now, to your point as far as being an entrepreneur, I talk about this all the time. As a matter of fact, in the area where I work, I talk to a couple of the young men that work outside, or I call them street pharmacists. And I ask them, I ask them, I say, is there anything that you like to do that you think that you can?
Muhammad? Street pharmacist?
Yes.
Okay. Street pharmacist. I get it. All right. We got new term basis, young man.
I say that.
A new term. Street pharmacy. Okay. Gotcha.
And I say that, and I'm going to explain why in a few minutes because we get ready to go. But I talked to him, and I asked him, I said, is there anything that you would like to do that you would want to start your own business? So I explained to him, I said, listen, all you need is to go to the IRS.gov, fill out for an EIN number, have your name and your business entity, start an LLC, sign up with the state, get paid $284, $200 for whatever license for whatever field, and $84 for it to be in good standing. And you have your own business. You don't
They're already good salesmen.
My point exactly. Because if you take that same energy and be, you know, working as a street pharmacist for 8 hours, 12 hours a day, then you could take that same energy and put it to something positive with less the risk but double the cost.
All you got to do is tell them to change the product.
That's it.
Keep that energy. Keep that thing that you learn off the corners to change the product. That's it.
Exactly. And when I ran for city council, and I said something that posted something on Facebook a while ago in the last election. Unfortunately, I didn't win, but I got behind the person that I thought that could bring changes to the area of Baltimore that we were both running for, because I want to see Baltimore better for Baltimore, better for Baltimore citizens. But anyway, something I posted, I said, if you can mix illegal drugs, then you can become a pharmacist. You can get your certification, then you can get the grants that you need, or people to pitch in, philanthropists, or the neighborhood, and ask them for help and start a black-owned pharmacy. Train others on how to be a pharmacist, and then they can train their businesses. And go back to the principles of how Black Wall Street was started, you know. Baltimore, Maryland.
Baltimore is the one few black cities we still have. All the other cities have been gentrified. Baltimore is the one few black cities that we have, and we have to save it, and we really got to get folks behind it, and we got to build our young men up, give them the support and the resources they need so they can start these businesses and become entrepreneurs or whatever. Send to the thing is, we got to have our own schools. We got to have our own schools. No more getting these schools from the government. We got to have our own schools. We have black-run, African-centered, and teach the STEM, science, technology, math,
and engineering.
Engineering, and you know, it got to be Africa centered. It got to be B1, Black First, and everything. Forget about George Washington and Abraham Lincoln. You know, we got to start focusing on us. Now, with a couple of minutes left, I want to get very, very personal with you, Sister Muhammad. Why do you want to run for office?
Why? Because I got tired of asking help from our government officials that have been in leadership here in Baltimore for the last 10-plus years or so, or maybe even longer, and getting a pat on the back and a kick in the behinds. And my grandmother always told me, if you want something done, you do it yourself. And I've seen people's situations, and I've gone through situations, and I knew that if other people were going through this, and as well as myself, then something needed to give, because we can't continue. That is the definition of insanity. You can't continue to do the same thing and expecting a different result. That's why I got into the political arena with pure intentions, not in it for personal agenda, financial or political agenda. I just want to see change and better for the people, period.
But Sister Muhammad, don't you know being a politician limits you? I know plenty of politicians. That's what I'm saying. That's what I say. It's not like I'm You know, I mean, I have worked on a couple campaigns in my lifetime and everything. Don't know that once you win and you see the real inside, there's some limitation of being a politician and working for the community that being independent. I mean, you go anywhere and work on your community issues.
Yes, I do know that sometimes being a politician can limit you, but at the same time, it can expand you as well, because you can maybe better off in a position to help those organizations in the community and change the way things are being done, because the way things are being done, especially in urban communities, it's not good. Taking the defund police, and that's a whole nother conversation in itself. that is detrimental to the black community.
Do black folks need their own agenda? That's the last question I'm going to ask you before I sign off. Do black folks need their own agenda?
Well, a sister told me this when I was running for city council. She said that we need to change the agenda, paraphrasing what she said. We need to change the agenda, period, for everyone. But one thing for sure and two things for certain, you have to focus on the sick part of the body first before you look at the rest of the body. Or a doctor's going to check the area of the body that's a bullet wound, has the bullet wound in it, compared to if he's going to check the foot and the foot is fine. So, yes, we need to focus on rebuilding our communities back up and getting back to the era of the Black Wall Street times or the era of the Rainbow Coalition times and do better as a people.
Sister Muhammad, I thank you for coming on the show. I enjoyed the stimulating conversation, and I hope you win. No, I hope. I know you're going to win. I know you're going to campaign hard. I know you're going to give it your all, even with your four daughters. Well, folks, that's it for another week. I'd like to thank Sister Muhammad for coming on the show. As always, I am because we are. We are because I am. Good night.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials, because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox and...